Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. My guest this morning is Professor Anne Duggan, who is a senior medical advisor at the Australian Commission of Safety and Quality in Healthcare, as well as a gastroenterologist and professor in the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Newcastle. Good morning, Anne. Thank you for your time.
Morning, Kate. It's a pleasure.
You've written a perspective for an upcoming issue of the MJA on variations in healthcare, but specifically on the second atlas produced by the Commission. Tell me, what is the atlas and what is its purpose and how will it improve outcomes for patients?
Well, the Atlas is a very collaborative endeavour which the Commission led, but it's important to recognise that it was highly engaged with representatives of the key colleges and also the jurisdiction. So, in fact, one of my roles was to chair the Atlas Advisory Group of clinical experts and consumer. And then I had my counterpart chair their committee, which was the Jurisdictional Advisory Group, so the states and territories, as well as the Commonwealth, were around the room. And what the Atlas aimed to do, and this is our second Atlas, was to look at some healthcare conditions and treatments of materiality, of importance to clinicians, importance to consumers, importance to Australia, and map those conditions by people's place of residence. So we were able to look at locations over, it was divided up into 300 odd locations, and we were able to see the variation in the rates of, for example, antibiotic use in the first atlas. In this second atlas, we looked at some women's health items and surgical items and preventable hospitalisations items. And we saw that quite markedly there were differences that you couldn't account for just as being variation due to differences in patients' needs.
I mean, that suggests that there's room for improvement.
Yes. I mean, I think it's the importance of giving the data back to clinicians and to the public based on where people live rather than where healthcare is provided says a lot to us about, well, are we providing healthcare that's effective and efficient and appropriate to all Australians? And I'll give you an example from this atlas. We found a 21-fold variation in endometrial ablation rates across Australia. So that's amazingly large, and so it really does ask the question, well, why is it so? Who's got it right? And in areas where it's not appropriate, why is that so? And so you'll see in the atlas, our clinical commentary from our experts have sort of raised some possible explanations for that. But I think it's a perfect example of about healthcare, how important it is to engage consumers in their healthcare so they know treatment options, to engage the system so that the system is providing new technology like ablation, and engage the colleges so ensuring that they're making sure their members are aware of the latest evidence and are trained up in providing the latest evidence. And so you can see that this is a very rich way of looking at our healthcare system at the pointy end and at also at policy levels, so that we're actually fine-tuning it, so we're actually providing the best healthcare system we can.
Now, the Atlas has made about 49 recommendations, not about, exactly 49 recommendations. What are the implications in those recommendations for clinicians and their day-to-day care of patients?
The first thing I think is that we are providing the clinicians with data for them to use. So not only is there the published atlas, but there's an interactive atlas which allows you to explore your area, allows you to compare your area with a like area, and also to allow you to look at the data in some important ways. So it's by socioeconomic status, by whether the rates for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians versus other Australians, and by remoteness. So first off, before even the recommendations, we are giving people their data. And we know that clinicians love data, and we know that data is a really important driver to excel, for people to get better. So with the recommendations, we're trying to support clinicians in the field. So, for example, you'll see that one of the recommendations that we, the Commission, has taken on is to provide some tools and resources for the system and particular clinicians to be able to understand variation and work on improving to get more appropriate care. So that's a resource we're going to provide. But there are other things that we've tried to do, ask the system to do to help clinicians. And you'll know that's a very practical one where we've said that, in fact, that the health services should provide way people, when they come in, work out their BMI or equivalent, so therefore the clinician, readily at hand, has that information so they can start talking to people about the significance of their weight in relation to their illness.
Yes.
And you'll notice that some of the conditions we looked at in the atlas, the drivers of those conditions are related to lifestyle factors. So if I take one, like obesity, then we looked at heart failure, we looked at knee replacement, we looked at diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that are really significant for a large proportion of Australians, but we know that part of the road to health is having the right weight, having the right diet, and all those sorts of preventative things that really can make people and keep people healthy rather than doing sort of sickness management. And I think all of us want to be healthy rather than actually be being sick and having our sickness managed. So I think part of the atlas is to help clinicians thinking more broadly about the whole patient, about prevention. But we've also said to do that, we really have to ensure that the system has thought about health literacy, and
yep.
That's something the Commission's done a lot of work on recently, and that's something that we need to get better and better at, recognising that there's different levels of literacy. If you want to get messages across, we need to tailor it to the audience at hand.
Are the GPs, for example, getting enough support and education and resources from the colleges and other sources?
Well, one of the reasons we wrote the perspective is that we do believe that the colleges have a key role in driving some of the necessary change. The
mm-hmm.
colleges train the specialists of tomorrow and the GPs of tomorrow, and it is becoming increasingly clear when we have so much chronic disease that there are elements across all colleges which we should be ensuring that colleges are skilling people up with. So trainees really should be thinking about the whole patient, should be thinking about looking at smoking, looking at exercise, looking at diet and weight, and having the skills and the resources to be able to have conversations with people that actually make a difference and help people to look after their health. At one level, years ago, we recognised the importance of smoking, and as a nation, we had our smoking rates drop to 16%. We now have an obesity epidemic. And we really do need to actually do something about that. And the colleges are in a prime position to ensure that trainees come out skilled in having conversations with people about their lifestyle, but skilled in being able to have conversations that are pitched with appropriate health literacy, that are actually culturally sensitive. There's just some examples where the best way to get this happening and get it across the line and getting a new generation of doctors who really are experts in this area is by the colleges. Now, there's some great work being done by the colleges. I know that the colleges of general practitioners have some tools and resources for talking about at weight. They've also got some skills and some tools there talking about managing patients with chronic obstructive airways disease and smoke. So there's some work being done, and of course we know that the Council of Presidents of Medical Colleges had their national symposium, I think you call it, in I think it was November last year, where
yes,
they talked
was,
about
yes.
the need to do work about obesity. So it's starting, but there's much more we can do. The tragedy is if we don't ensure that everybody that we meet in a clinical setting knows about how they can actually prevent diseases and illness. I'm a gastroenterologist. I do a lot of bowel cancer screening, but I know that over 50% of bowel cancer is due to lifestyle factors, so that if people had the right diet, did the right amount of exercise, were the right weight, didn't drink too much and didn't smoke, they would be much more effective strategies than all the colonoscopies I can do. We need to get the message out there to people, because we know that people are interested in their health. There's a lot of online material, there's a lot of books sold about this. So medicine's in this prime position where we have a scientific approach, so we know how to evaluate evidence. We just need to be able to be better at communicating it, I think. Diabetes, of course, is a perfect example of where we could prevent a lot of disease by being more preventative focused.
It's not just about clinical outcomes, though, is it? It's about economics as well.
It is about economics. I mean, there's no doubt about that. If we keep on talking about we haven't got enough money but in the system, but I suspect that really we just need to work out where we get the best bang for our bucks and focus on those areas. And I think the ACCESS is trying to do that by in its commentary, talking about how you can get to where you want to get to in a more sensible and patient-focused way.
You mentioned that there was an interactive version of the Atlas. I'm assuming that's on the Commission's website?
It is, and it provides a lot of user-friendly data. So it enables people to see everything you see in the printed copy in terms of the variation across Australia, but it gives people their data by SA3. But also the interactive Atlas, we've actually mapped according to how people see the world. So primary health network, local health network, giving people, if you hover on your area, you can see your rate and the rate of your state or nationally. So it gives people a feeling for where they're sitting relating to other perspectives, not saying that any particular, automatically that any particular rate's right. I'd hate the message to get out that just the national rate's the right rate, because we do know that when we compare ourselves to other countries, sometimes we are higher. You know, we've got second highest dispensing rate for antidepressants in the world after Iceland.
Is there going to be a third Atlas?
Yes. We're working on that at the moment. Yes.
What's the timeline for that, do you think?
Oh, I think next year we'll be seeing our Atlas number 3.
Will it have a different focus?
We're talking about that at the moment because one of the things that we realise we're doing is we're providing data. But there's a lot of work to be done to make the changes that need to be made.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be burdening one particular group. And so we're thinking about some of the things that have got materiality and importance to other clinical groups and so that we can engage them as well and address some of the other issues that really would benefit from having that light shone upon it.
Anne, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, for inviting me.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.